What is... Dax, are you...
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker? On all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all. So we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge! Trucks up 3.9%!
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
You might think financial crime is all about money, but sometimes it ends in murder. I'm Nicole Lappin, host of Money Crimes, a Crime House original podcast. Each episode features a thrilling story about the dark side of finance and how to protect yourself from it. Follow and listen to Money Crimes, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Crime House Studios, available on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up? Welcome in, Grant and Danny, on a Tuesday. You are locked into the Fan. It's January 14th, and we are just 4 days away from playing more postseason football. The Washington Commanders, the Detroit Lions, Saturday night in front of the country on Fox. Kevin Burkhardt and Tom Brady on the call, Danny. You get to listen to Tom Brady break down Jaden Daniels.
Yeah, Burkhardt's great. Tom Brady, it's, you know, I know that's not like the focal point here of the old radio program. The fact that the Washington 53 is in the divisional round is kind of the big takeaway there. But I think the big weakness no one talks about with Brady, doesn't have a great voice. Like, I know that's not the only thing that matters, but it matters a lot. He, like, after a little while, like, you could hear the fry in his voice, like, mid-first quarter. It's like, I as someone who has struggled with voice issues and, like, you know, strep throat and laryngitis a million times, I've gone through medical procedures to try to fix all this crap. Like, I'm sympathetic to it, but, like, he runs out of steam quick, and it's not a great listen.
I'm content over voice every single time. I don't need you to have golden pipes, but I don't think it's, like, what his voice sounds like. It's, he does not broadcast well yet. He does not go up and down and meet the moment. I mean, there's a lot he's still got to figure out. He's in his infancy. It's very early for Tom Brady. But I would say my take on him right now is that he's fine. And because he's Brady, because he is one of the most popular athletes of all time, because we know what his contract figures were, $37.5 million a year, 10 years and $375 million, because he booted one of the most popular A-team color guys of the last 25 years in Greg Olsen, being fine is just not good enough at this point. I think people were expecting, well, he's got to be great. They wouldn't have paid him this money. You can't pay him this and move him up to the A-team right away if he's not immediately one of the great analysts in football. And he's just not. He's a very pedestrian, okay. He's not bad. There's nothing wrong. But he's just got a long way to go, and he was given the keys to the kingdom. And so, you know, it's like getting called up right after you're drafted.
Sure.
If you hit 225 with a few home runs and you hold your own, that's not that interesting. But when I'm told you're the next great player in the sport and you don't need to be in the minor leagues and you're graduating at 19 years old, I think there's just more expected of you. That's all. But he's okay. He's just not going to add a lot to your broadcast this weekend.
Yeah, so I guess that'll be a sticking point that you and I disagree about. I just think it doesn't have that high of a ceiling. Like, again, you don't have to have the perfect announcer voice at all times. Like, that's not realistic and that's not fair. But, like, to me, it's like a more grating listen. If he had the most sophisticated and excellent points at all times, I still think he can't be as good as Greg Olsen, who's got a much more pleasant listen over the course of 60-plus minutes.
So, maybe it's just because I'm not, like, I'll never have a great voice for this. I don't really care about what you sound like as much as, are you making interesting points and making me smarter? If you don't sound awesome while you're doing it, I'm not giving a job to, you know, deep voice guy just because he's got it.
Right, totally.
I need you to be good at the
other stuff. I mean, it's, so, like, for example, my favorite analyst is Charles Davis. It's not as if Charles Davis has a booming radio voice where he's broadcast. Like, he's not.
So you're not talking about pipes. You're talking about.
But I am.
Like, broadcast voice.
Yeah, like, there's a line of good enough to broadcast, just the sound. I'm not going to get tired of it. It's fine. I don't need voiceover, big voice guy. I don't need that. But then there's the other side where I go, I can't listen to this for that long. And there, so certain people are not blessed with being on that good side. To me, he's not on that good side.
Interesting. Clinton Portis is on the show today at 3 o'clock. Hopefully his voice will be okay for you.
It's good. I like Lindor's voice, line. Yeah.
Austin Eckler, you've never complained about his voice.
Very good voice.
I think you're fine with it.
Mm-hmm.
He'll be on the show at 5 o'clock today, so I'm excited to hear from what he's got to say about the win, the locker room after the W, how they feel about the Detroit game. He will be the first player from the Commanders who played in the win to be on the station. So we're excited to talk to him today. And then Ross Tucker is going to be on the program to preview the divisional round. We're going to go through all the games, but there's one particular game, I think.
We're pretty concerned about one.
That you guys really care about on Saturday night, and that's the Commanders and the Lions. So we'll talk to Ross, who played here in Washington under Steve Spurrier at one point in time. And I can't wait for that conversation. It's been a while since he's been on the show.
Yeah, they were in the playoffs a bunch during that era, right?
Yeah, both years. He was here with Spurrier. I think they made conference title
conference
games.
Conference championship games, yeah.
I'm not going to look it up, but I'm pretty sure that's the
case.
Don't
bother looking it up. It's fun.
So the Final Four in the conference is now set, and that is based on the fact that we had Monday Night Football last night, and the Rams hosted the Vikings in Phoenix, Arizona, a neutral site game. L.A. was fantastic in this game defensively. The blitzes they drew up, the amount of pressure they got to Sam Darnold, who struggled immensely on a big stage. The story's going to be Sam Darnold stinks, I told you so, he's no good.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't play well. This was bigger than that. He was under absolute duress from the moment he took his first snap of the game. The Rams had their number. And I want to raise my hand here and say I was so wrong about Sean McVay sitting his starters in Week 18 and electing to play the loser of Detroit, Minnesota over Washington. Not because of anything that happened with the Commanders and the Bucks, but because it's pretty obvious to me that he knew if the Vikings played L.A., they were going to win. They played them twice this year. Two of the four losses for the Vikings were to the Rams. They lost twice to the Lions. They lost twice to the Rams. And L.A. outplayed them pretty considerably in both games.
Mm-hmm.
But defensively, they have their number. I thought McVay's coaching staff just destroyed O'Connell and the Vikings staff last night in every phase.
Agreed. It's why I picked him, not only to win, but to cover. And I didn't have as near as much of a problem with as a lot of people with him sitting, folks. I mean, it's a big risk because let's say it doesn't work out. Let's say one of those deep passes to Jordan Addison hits instead of, you know, rattling out, or, you know, Justin Jefferson wins a jump ball. Then it's a one-score game. Who knows what could happen? But certainly the best laid plans.
Well, I'll say this too, though.
Sure.
You don't know that the Vikings are going to lose to the Lions when you sit your guys.
Right.
Could have been Detroit
last night.
In a neutral site game in Phoenix. And I think if that's the case, the Lions beat them maybe handily, but certainly win the game as the better team than Minnesota, and it backfires. But because it worked out that it was the Vikings, and right away we saw it was like a two-point line, felt like a pick'em game. We talked about it yesterday, could go either way. As soon as it became Minnesota, who you've already beaten and outplayed, it was a much more friendly matchup. But we haven't even acknowledged they didn't get to play at home.
Right.
They were dealing with the fires out in L.A. all week and the preparations they were making and getting families out of homes and so many things going on and distractions. You wouldn't have known it. They didn't look like the distracted team last night. Matthew Stafford came out sharp as a tack. And defensively, I keep going back to, that was as dominant a performance by a front in a pressure-generating blitz package than I've seen maybe all year long. It was crazy how often they got into the backfield.
Because it wasn't as if offensively the Rams were that good, to be honest with you, for most of that game, right? I mean, they moved the ball some, but it's a lot of punt. It's a defensive touchdown, and they managed three scores, two touchdowns and a field goal. Like, that's not as if we just saw the 99 Rams.
They scored on their opening drive in the first 4 minutes of the game.
Which looked really good.
And they did not score offensively again until there was 15 seconds left in the half. That was the first half for them.
Yep.
They got a defensive touchdown from Jared Verse, who's great, by the way.
Yes, he is.
The defensive end, rookie, Florida State. Excellent player they got in the late first round. But yeah, I thought last night was more about their defense than
100%
their offense.
It was, yeah. So just to Darnold specifically, that's the topic. And, you know, jerks like me that are sitting there going, yeah, I don't trust him, I don't believe in it. You could take a victory lap if you want to.
People have been waiting, and they did.
But to me, this was the recipe, and there's something to it. And here's what I mean. If you knock him around, he sees ghosts. This is his weakness.
Any quarterback in the league, but continue.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Him more so, because you get a performance that is historically bad. A lot of people have gotten sacked and gotten hit and played poorly.
Nine times?
This was among the worst halves, talking about the first half, among the worst halves of football ever recorded at the quarterback position. A negative 20 EPA per play. He'd have been better off, quite literally, spiking the ball or taking a knee, and then they would punt. That's kind of that next level. The Rams deserve a ton of credit for it, and they were confident they'd be able to do that to some degree. But I think Darnold cost himself an awful lot, maybe in the open market, in terms of what people think of him. And you know, it sounds like Minnesota is, you know, they got a kid that back in September, Kevin O'Connell was going, "We got the right guy in this building." They didn't mean Sam Darnold. They meant J.J. McCarthy, who's the heir apparent they drafted in the first round, and rightfully so. But it'll be fascinating where Darnold goes now. And if someone could say, "I'll take that 15 plus games of him being awesome," over these last couple where he was a disaster.
Yeah, the last two games cost him an unbelievable amount of money because he played a terrible game against Detroit. He played two really bad games. I mean, last night he played very badly. There's no doubt about that. But the Detroit game was more operator error for Darnold. He was missing throws that were wide open early in that game. They were in the red zone a couple times, and he just didn't make throws and put the ball where it needed to be for touchdowns. Last night was, I think, twofold. One, he was not sharp. He did not play well, clearly. But he got hit 13 times and sacked 9 times. Mm-hmm. And several of those sacks as the game went on were on him holding the ball.
Yep.
There were a couple where it's like, what are you doing? I mean, he was a big part of the issue. But if you watch that game, he was just under siege. And both of those things can be true. Like, I don't know that Patrick Mahomes last night looks good.
No.
He looks better than Darnold because he's great and Darnold isn't. Josh Allen, Jaden Daniels, like name your quarterback who right now is one of the best in football. They lose that game or at least play really badly last night offensively if they're under that much pressure. But whatever the Rams were able to concoct during the bye week they created for themselves by resting their starters, to me, is the story.
They are scary.
And they took the script from the Lions from a week ago and some of the designs and the blitzes and how they got to Darnold, and it worked. Which now means we move on to the divisional round and to the Elite Eight in the National Football League that the Commanders are a part of. Two games on Saturday set for the AFC. You've got the Texans and the Chiefs. That's a 4-1 matchup. Houston, who upset the Chargers at home. They were one of the only home underdogs. So were the Rams, by the way. Mm-hmm. Both of them won. The Texans move on and get the Chiefs, who are the one seed coming off a bye in the AFC. C.J. Stroud had a down year. That offense had a bad year. And they bounced back pretty well in the opening round.
Yep.
They got off to a really slow start offensively. And Stroud, I thought, early looked flustered and bad. But because the Chargers stunk so much, Justin Herbert eventually threw four interceptions. They eventually got their footing and pulled away. In
Houston's
game.
Defense gave him a chance right there. So yeah. Eventually, if we just keep chopping wood, something will happen. And it did.
But the Chiefs got to be licking their lips with the chance to play Houston. And now, this is how it goes. Like, if you remember the Patriots during their run, when every year they got to the AFC Championship game, and they got to so many Super Bowls and went down in history as the team, it would be a lot of this, whatever this is, which is you get a bye, and then you're one win away from beating a pretty mediocre team, honestly, in the Houston Texans, from the AFC Championship game. Like, that's what it takes. For some teams, Washington's got to go to Tampa and survive the Bucs. Now you got to go to Detroit in the loudest environment this weekend in football and beat the number one seed in the NFC. And if you can win 8 quarters of football and emerge from those two levels against the bad guy, you get to go play in an NFC championship game. Where the Chiefs just kind of get to sit at home with their feet up, and then they have to beat the vaunted Houston Texans out of the AFC South, who barely got to 10 wins, playing really bad teams in their division. And then you get to go play in your conference title game.
So to that point, humor me on this. Who's a better team? Bills or the Texans?
The Bills.
Ravens or the Texans?
Ravens.
Eagles or the Texans?
Eagles.
Lions or the Texans?
Lions.
Rams or the Texans right now this minute?
Rams.
Rams. Washington or Houston?
I would say Washington has 13 wins and just beat the Bucs on the road, which is more impressive than beating the Chargers at home. So I'd say Washington.
Yeah, so it's... But somebody could debate that. But that's the point. Houston, Kansas City has to beat either the worst or the second worst team left in the postseason to go to the conference title game again. Because they've earned it. I'm not belittling that.
That's
but
what
the point
happens
is,
when you go 15-1 in your first 16 games.
You win 15 games, you get your home field, and New England always got to do it because their division was hot garbage. But Kansas City deserves all their success. They've been toying with their food all throughout the regular season and just winning games by just enough. And now here they are, a win away against a team that's fine. Nothing wrong with Houston, but they're not great. They're nowhere near as good as a lot of the teams that are left at this moment. So I think your point is well seen. Spread, by the way, 8.5 in that game. That feels big to me, even though it is Kansas City and they're at home. I feel like they just don't cover that huge number. This is not a handful of years ago Kansas City where they're going to score 40. Their defense is so good. I think they'll do enough. I think they win the game. I think they're going to the AFC title game again, which they always do because they've got Reed and Mahomes and company. But 8.5 feels big to me.
Commanders, Lions, speaking of 8.5, that's where the line is opened in that game in Detroit. Saturday night at 8 p.m. Washington has its hands full in a lot of ways. Trying to figure out how these corners are going to slow down that passing attack with Amon-Ra St. Brown, who feasts on nickel corners in the slot, can move outside as well. Trying to deal with Jameson Williams and his speed on the boundary with Lattimore, who seems either hobbled or just not very effective right now. Does he go against Sanra still, who's been basically playing above his weight class here outside when he was drafted to be inside? Does he get looks against Benjamin St. Juice as the game goes on? You know, that's scary, and yet it's the part of the game that I feel better about for Washington, weirdly. I have no idea how they're going to stop the run. The DVOA number 26 run-stopping defense of the Commanders against the DVOA number 2 running offense of the Lions. And if you think the Bucs and Bucky Irving are pretty good running the football,
wait till you see this tandem.
Wait till you get a peek at Jahmyr Gibbs and David Montgomery, who's coming back, has been out, is healthy, and is rested. That physical Brian Robinson Rich, that's B-Rob if all the faders are turned up to 100 and then some. And then they've got Jahmyr Gibbs, who's a lot better than him. Which, by the way, I was thinking about this. They played Saquon Barkley recently, who went for 100 in the first quarter. Mm-hmm. They played Bijan Robinson, who almost single-handedly beat them until he wasn't able to run the ball because the Falcons never got the ball for the entire second half, essentially. And now they're playing Jahmyr Gibbs. Tell me more about how you can't draft running backs early. I've always thought that's one of the stupidest things that people think in the NFL. I understand not paying running backs, Danny, on that second after they've had their rookie contract, because it costs so much money and they've already run the ball a few hundred times and they're starting to wear down. But when you watch Jahmyr Gibbs with the Lions, who they traded up for, I believe, to take at like 12. When you watch Bijan Robinson, who just carried the Falcons almost to the playoffs at 8, or the difference Barkley, who's a former top 5 pick, is making for the Eagles as he ran for 2,000 yards. It's just always, to me, I'm not saying you should draft a running back there. I'm saying the idea that you should absolutely pass on those running backs is silly. What kind of team are you? What kind of team do you want to be? That's why I'd be perfectly fine with Ashton Jeanty or Cam Scadaboo or the pick for Washington needing a running back. But Jahmyr Gibbs is that guy. He is a beast.
He's terrific. He's the kind of running back that I love.
You like running backs who can catch the ball?
But it's funny to say, like, you mean the guy that had 1,400 yards and 16 touchdowns on the ground and also is a great receiver?
You're into
that? Did you like Marshall Faulk too, idiot? But you know what I mean. Like, I prefer the home run hitting threat to the guy that NFL teams seem to love for the most part. It's like, we're going to establish some physicality. He's going to turn 2 into 2.5, downhill, thumping, wear down the defense. That's nice. Running start, pitch play is him in space, please.
Yeah.
To me, I am 1,000 times, and Montgomery's good too. I mean, don't get me wrong. He'll thump, and they had, I think, almost 30 rushing touchdowns as a team this year. But Gibbs, head full of steam, in space, greater than the terrifying index, almost anybody else that they have to deal with.
B-Rob is a singles and doubles hitter, and that's kind of what the Commanders have majored in at running back for as long as I can remember.
Yeah, the Alfred Morris school of running backing.
Montgomery, I would say, can hit you a triple every now and then in the right ballpark. Like, he can leg one out, but he's mostly a doubles hitter. Jahmyr Gibbs hits bolts. That is a home run hitter, and that's what I want in the backfield.
Yeah, but Montgomery's longest carry of the year is 21 yards, for example.
That is less than I would have thought.
Yeah.
But, I mean, again, it's singles, it's doubles. You block it up perfectly. Like, B-Rob had the 40-yard touchdown against the Titans where it was untouched. It's the longest run of his career, tied with another run this season, actually. Similarly, when you stack the box against...
It was the Giants. There was that pile-up and everyone stopped and he came out.
Yeah. That's what it takes to get to 40.
Mm-hmm.
Most any other time you're getting angled out by a safety, you're going to be in the 20 to 30 range in terms of your long run of the year. Sunday slate's going to be really good as well. Rams, Eagles, and Philly all of a sudden looks like a fun little matchup. I mean, the Eagles did not play a great game against the Packers. They were lucky to have escaped with a home win. Jalen Hurts in that passing offense, if they're not broken, they're sprained. If they're not broken, they are hairline fractured. I mean, there is something not completely right with that passing attack. And I don't know if the Rams are portable enough now to go to Philly outdoors in that environment and play the same game they just played against the Vikings. I know this, though, Danny. If they play like they did against Minnesota defensively,
they'll have a shot.
They will be in the NFC Championship game. They will beat the Eagles if they can replicate any part of that performance defensively.
Yeah, I wonder how confident they'll be to do it that way. Does that make any sense? Like you clearly can go all in and blitz the way that they did and mask and disguise some things because you're not afraid of X or Y or whatever. Are you more afraid of Jalen Hurts doing, oh, I read that, so now this slant's open or this RPO can happen or I can check to this? It looked like they had the answer key for Minnesota's offense. But I'm with you. If you could pressure like that, you beat everybody in this league, quite frankly. There's no team that I'd go, if the Rams play that way defensively, I would favor the other team.
And I don't even just mean the pressures. Like, they did an awesome job on Justin Jefferson.
They did everything, yeah.
They were more physical with him at the line and jamming him than I've seen anybody be in a long time. They doubled him. He did not catch a pass after the second quarter. With like about 3 minutes to go in the second quarter, he had 5 catches for 58 yards, and I'm almost sure that's where he ended up last night. Finally, the nightcap on Sunday and the fourth of the final games this weekend, this is your grand finale. I mean, this is the one, I think, respectfully, to Washington-Detroit, which should be a lot of fun here. Nationally, all eyes are going to be on Ravens-Bills. The two guys that are vying for the MVP award, the two quarterbacks that maybe played the best football in the National Football League this season, this side of Joe Burrow. Lamar Jackson in Baltimore, in Buffalo, ice cold, windy at night, Josh Allen and the Bills trying to finally punch their ticket back to the AFC Championship game, presumably for another crack at Patrick Mahomes
and Mahomes
and
company.
City.
Yep. Same with
the AFC field is just, I'm not saying it's better, it's just more fun.
I'm saying it's better.
Bills, Ravens, Chiefs. I'm sorry, Texans. I mean, I guess they could shock them.
Right.
But Kansas City's going to be playing against Baltimore or Buffalo. It's going to be Mahomes versus Allen or Jackson. Like, sign me up right now.
Yeah, I mean, the second-to-last fight for both of these teams, whether it's the Bills or Ravens, it comes out victorious. Like, there's the mega boss at the end. Like, there's the vampire sitting back up or, you know, whatever you want to call it. Like, that beast that nobody has slain, except for Tom Brady in overtime when the rules were dumb, and Joe Burrow once. Joe Burrow's not in this postseason. That's it. Everybody else, he goes to the Super Bowl. He goes to the AFC title game every year, and then he goes to the Super Bowl. So it's like this, you obviously can't look past. Both of these teams are excellent. Talk about the Ravens and the Bills. Ravens are 1.5-point road favorites, which I thought was interesting. I would have said either close to a pick 'em or maybe even the Bills slightly favorite because you mentioned the conditions are going to be miserable. But that game, that's the game of the weekend, right? It just is.
Means that on a neutral site, they'd be 3 or 3.5-point favorites.
Mm-hmm.
Feels right to me, the way they've been playing, honestly. I think they should be the favorite in this game, even on the road. I mean, you watch the first half of that Steelers game.
Yeah.
The first half they played against Pittsburgh, I think, beats anybody in football. And people have said this all year, and it's probably true. If everyone's playing the best football that they possibly can, Baltimore's ceiling might be the highest in the league.
That's my view.
With their defense, MVP caliber QB, a 2,000-yard back at his side, they're just a really tough customer. But that's a Super Bowl caliber game we get this Sunday night.
That's right. In the divisional round.
If you're talking about two of the top five teams in the league, we'll get another one in the AFC Championship game.
Mm-hmm.
We'll probably get one in the NFC Championship game, depending on the matchup. But that's Super Bowl caliber right here in round number two, which is great. Let's take another look and first dive into Washington and Detroit. What gives you hope going into this matchup? We can throw that question out on the MGM National Harbor listener lines at 800-636-1067. This ain't Commanders Bucks, folks. This is not a 3-point dog on the road. This is a little more David versus Goliath in the eyes of a lot of people around the landscape here. What gives you hope that you can knock off the best team in the NFC all year long, circuit to circuit, the heavy favorite to represent the NFC in the Super Bowl since day number one this football season? We'll get to that next on The Fan. Grant and Danny on The Fan. Tip of the cap to Darius. He knows how to get his guy going. Little party till we die is going to do that.
For you, yes.
For both of us,
for
I think.
For Grant Paulson.
I see you tapping that foot over there.
That is a stretch because my back's a little tight.
There Commanders, Lions, stage, set, Saturday night football with the country watching. What gives you hope in a matchup where very few people outside of D.C. are going to give Washington much of a chance? That is the question at 800-636-1067.
The easiest answer, I'll get out of the way first. I have two things. One is we got Jaden Daniels. He plays here. Makes a lot of bad look fun. He's the the black clothing, the vertical stripes, the good mirror, the good lighting, makes a lot of gross people. Like a lot of fives look like eights, thanks to Jaden Daniels. That's number one, and that's obvious. Number two, I'll throw a couple numbers at you. 559, 382, 475. These are not signals. It's not a phone number. Yardage totals. Got some point totals to go with them against the Detroit Lions. That defense, despite our most recent sample, where they shoved it on Minnesota, Aaron Glenn did a great job. That was awesome. 34 points given up to the San Francisco 49ers. Chicago moved the ball at will and sabotaged themselves, but had a great chance to score probably 30 points. The Bills scored 48 against them. The Packers, 31. You see the theme here. Detroit can score, and it's the best offense in the sport. They're unbelievable. Washington can't stop them. I don't know that they can stop Jaden Daniels. And if you're in a firefight, if you're going back and forth and back and forth, then maybe whoever's got the ball last has a chance. I mean, again, Detroit is favored. They should be favored. They're better. You play this game 10 times, maybe Washington wins 1.5. That's not the point. The point is, there's no sure thing when it comes to that defense. And I like Washington's chances to put up some points. And then who knows?
It's not baseball, man. You don't need to win best of 7, 4 out of 7 series. It's not how this is.
Mm-hmm.
You got to beat them once. You're right. The Lions defense is also where I'd like to isolate my hope and conversation here. They played an inspired, tremendous game against the Vikings. They were nearly perfect. It was awesome. It was a standalone primetime national TV game. Everybody watched it. The discussion and the discourse right now about Detroit is different, and I think flawed, because of that one game defensively. This has been a bad defense for much of the year. Aaron Glenn's going to get a head coaching job, primarily because he's an extension of Dan Campbell, and he's kind of the guy in that building viewed as, along with Campbell, most responsible for setting that culture. Former player, player-friendly, beloved. He's done a pretty good job at times with that defense, statistically. Not this year, though, but with all those injuries. Now, he had a masterful performance against the Vikings. He was splendid. I think he was already getting a head coaching job. That was the nail in the coffin of any chance that he wouldn't. And understandably, it was as impressive an individual coaching day as I think I've seen in the league this year. It was that good. He's a good football coach. But that defense is not that good because of their injuries. They won't have Aiden Hutchinson back. They're not going to have the majority of the 15-plus guys that they've lost on that side of the ball this year. Even with that masterpiece and that gem against the Vikings, this is the number 27 defense in the NFL in yards per play. This is the number 30 defense in the league in yards per game allowed, but they're 22nd per play against the run and against the pass. They are bottom 4 in the NFL at getting sacks. Pressure has not been something routinely that they generate, and to generate it, they've got to send extra guys. That means Jaden Daniels sees where it's coming from and throws behind the blitz. I do believe this matchup for Washington is way better for their offense than going to Tampa was. I believe that. Indoors, you're not dealing with any kind of, 50 degrees outside, Tampa, Florida. It's going to be a terrible place to play in terms
noisy.
Of loud, getting, off the ball and not having penalties and false starts. That'll get tougher. But otherwise, just the matchup offensively, this will be an easier game for the offense. It's a worse matchup overall. You're less likely to win it than you were because the Lions are just a lot better than the Bucks.
Yeah.
But you got Jaden Daniels, and that defense is susceptible to allowing you to move the football. You're going to score.
So the plan for me would be to do what you did against Tampa, turned up to 11, which is we're not going for the quick strike offense. We may run tempo, but we'll use the full play clock. The longer you've got the ball, the longer they don't have it. So I'd anticipate Washington trying to do more of the same. Now, again, easier said than done, because that implies you got to at some point get Detroit off the field. And I don't know how they do, as they've got Montgomery, they've got Gibbs, they've got St. Brown, they've got Williams over the top, they've got Laporta, they got that excellent offensive line. Jared Goff's the maestro. A better defense could knock the string bean around a couple of times and maybe get him off his mark. This isn't the better defense. This is not a good one, quite frankly. So at some point, you got to get a stop. I don't know when that's going to happen, but to me, the hope is that you can make them go, for example, I'm just making this up, 45 minutes of real time without having the football. End the first half with a long drive. Halftime happens. You start the second half with a long drive. Maybe you get them off the rhythm a little bit. But the longer Washington's got the ball, kind of again doing what they did against Tampa, where they possess the ball for 35, 36 minutes, that's the design to me. That's the hope.
Golf in structure is
great.
Elite.
Yeah.
Right? In terms of being able to, if the play that is called is executed and the receiver gets free and comes out of his break and he gets to the back of the drop and he's not pressured, he doesn't have to move and he can deliver the football as a pure thrower.
He could spin it.
It's top 10. It's mm-hmm. top five, right? And we've seen this, like Cousins-esque in that way. When you got to start moving around and creating and extending with Jared Goff, that's where it becomes a problem. Dad just sent me a couple of updates here. So we know David Montgomery is going to be back at running back. That's huge. They're also probably going to get their guard Kevin Zeitler back. So that, those are offensive, though. They're already a juggernaut. You only get better there, whatever. That's going to be a tall order. That's why probably Detroit wins the game, because Washington's going to have a hard time defensively. But on the other side of the ball, where you need them to stay banged up, mm-hmm. Terrion Arnold got hurt in that Vikings game, who's their corner. He'll probably play. He is saying that he's going to. And then Ennis Rakestraw is another one of their corners who's been hurt for a while, has been at least trending up. They have opened the practice window for him to come back from injured reserve. And we'll get more updates, obviously, as we get closer to the weekend. Let's go to Tony in Long Island. Good to hear from you, buddy.
Tony.
What gives you hope that Washington can knock off the heavily favored Lions?
Oh, man. Fellas, how we doing? Before I get started, I just want to say congratulations on 11 years. You know, I started listening to you guys in, like, 2016. I was just dying to – you guys were really therapy for really dark times, and it's just amazing that it's all in the rearview mirror now and clear skies ahead. So
thanks, buddy.
Appreciate you, buddy.
Yeah, it's actually surreal that we're all going through this.
Seriously.
I'm gonna go with this one. You know, Dan Campbell is an impressive coach, and he's done all the right things, and he's turned the culture around. He's done all that. That's great. But now he's going to have to take the next step as an NFL head coach. And that's what makes great coaches. He's going to have to steer a juggernaut to a championship, and that's not easy. So I think he's done a great job. He's a very, very aggressive coach. But I think if we get in that dome and we just put a little pressure on him, and we put a little pressure on that team, his aggressiveness may come back to bite him. He may do something that really flips that game on its head. He may go for it from his own 28. You know, really brief, I'll give you something that, you know, Bill Belichick said himself. It's one of the worst calls he's ever made as a NFL head coach. In the Super Bowl versus the Giants in 2007, he went for it on 4th and 13 from his own 30-yard line. And that turned the game on its head.
When was that?
Court.
I don't even remember.
I don't remember
that. Was it early? It had to be late, yeah. Right?
Well, it was, I think, mid to late third quarter.
Yeah.
And they didn't get it. And that game, now, the Giants didn't score. But what they had to do was their defense had to expend so much energy just to gain field position back for the rest of the remainder of that game. They were in the hole.
Well, I can't wait for the fourth down decisions in this game, because Dan Quinn is slowly morphing into Dan Campbell a little bit here. He's Riverboat Dan. 5 fourth down attempts, all in plus territory. I don't think he's ever going to be the guy that goes in minus territory, although I think that's the next frontier and makes a lot of sense if it's short yardage. But the Lions will, and if it backfires, it is a massive benefit to Washington.
That's the point, right? Where it's, you know, if you know, you're talking about getting a matter of millimeters, inches, you know, a foot, whatever. The case that it doesn't work, like a 70-30 proposition in favor of you, doesn't work out for Detroit, massive momentum swing. And the point is, those percentages are available. That happens.
We're getting a feel from the fan base on what gives you hope playing against the Lions this Saturday night. 800-636-1067. Also next, I want to hit on the Cowboys rumors. Mike McCarthy is out, not coming back, and Deion Sanders is apparently a candidate for their head coaching job. This is The Fan.
Just early thoughts on Detroit's defense, just what they've obviously had a lot of injuries, but it's still been pretty productive.
Yeah, good defense. They get their hands on the ball, obviously, with Kirby and, well, I'll call him BB, but Brian Branch. Obviously, up front, what they could do, create pressure, play some man coverage because they trust their guys on the outside. You know, it's going to be a challenge for us.
That was Jaden Daniels who spoke today. We should play some of that a little bit later in the show for people. Grant and Danny welcoming you back on The Fan. It's a Tuesday. Washington is getting ready for Saturday night football, so they're a day ahead in their prep and their planning. This is more like a Wednesday, which is why Daniel spoke. Real quick before we hit the phones and get back to Commanders Lions and why you've got hope in this game. So we knew yesterday during the show that Mike McCarthy was not going back to Dallas. What we didn't know was who was going to emerge as a favorite for their head coaching job. And I don't know that this guy's a favorite at all, but one of the names that has now come out as of last night via Jordan Schultz is that the Cowboys have called Deion Sanders, the head coach at Colorado and the Hall of Fame defensive back.
Who's a bigger star?
The longtime great Dallas Cowboy. And Jerry Jones and him have at least discussed the possibility of Deion Sanders coaching the Cowboys. Now, I said this about Bill Belichick going to the Lions, and I ended up to the UNC, I should say, to the Tar Heels, and I ended up being wrong. I can't see this happening. To me, this feels like somebody's agent, Deion's, and a reporter kind of having a conversation, and it's good for Deion Sanders if he's mentioned with a head coaching job, and next thing you know, he and Jerry Jones get on the line, and somebody leaks that they talked about the job. I think it's way more whatever that is. Like the Ron Rivera interview with the Jets to me was, let's talk to Ron Rivera, not Ron Rivera's probably going to end up being the head coach of the Jets. That's where I'm at on this. I think this is not a real, legitimate, credible possibility. I don't know how you feel, but I do want to say this with the platform that we have.
Okay.
Jerry.
Yes.
Jerry Jones.
Yes.
Is this you?
Yes, man. Yes, right here.
This is Grant Paulson.
Oh, hi, Grant. It's good to speak with you.
I do some radio in Washington, D.C.
Yes, I'm aware.
Most powerful city in the world.
We can find someone else to ask these questions now.
Please, Jerry. Please, 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 please hire Deion Sanders as your head coach.
Well, it's something we're considering, and if we do it, it's because I say so, not because you say so.
Whatever it takes.
Yeah.
I beg of you. Start a GoFundMe. I'll throw some money in on it. Hire Deion Sanders as your head coach as soon as possible. Please, Jerry, do this. Your circus of an operation that is more famous than it is good, that job that you have, that opening, is high profile. It's notable. It's not a good job necessarily, as Troy Aikman correctly said on Monday Night Football last night. But I'm begging of you, sir, please make the circus, add an act or two, and bring in Deion Sanders.
So where we disagree, and I can never be proven right or wrong necessarily, because if it doesn't happen, it doesn't mean it wasn't a threat. I do think this is real. This feels, even though, you know, I know this isn't what Jerry's done over the previous couple of decades, where it's been Jason Garrett, who's the most boring, Mike McCarthy, just a regular old football guy who was in charge for a handful of seasons. This does feel like I need to shake it up. And who better than a guy that's had success and is the hot name right now?
We also are going to have a really hard time getting a grown-up to take that job, because people that have influence and power and are good hires want to also have some say in the operation. Mm-hmm. Like, it was reported today by Adam Schefter that Elliot Wolf of the Patriots, their GM, is going to report to Mike Vrabel. They're going coach-centric, essentially.
Ugh.
I don't think he's going to have the title like Ron Rivera had, but Vrabel gets the final say on personnel as the head coach of the Patriots. That was the way to get him. He was the favorite to land three jobs. I think anybody who has watched football the last 5 years knew that guy would be out of a gig for 3 hours. That's how they got him back. For Dallas, you're going to go work with Jerry Jones and be told what to do by an owner in his mid-80s?
Who's the GM also?
Who's also the GM? Mm-hmm. I mean, good luck getting a grown-up.
Yeah, like, so you need somebody, like somebody is going to be, he's doing his own press conferences where Deion Sanders is saying whatever he wants to say. Then Jerry goes on the radio and either contradicts it or compliments it or makes his own story 2 days later. I mean, you can't stop that machine. Whatever that content machine is, does not have an off switch.
Hire Deion Sanders, please. And then he can trade Dak to the Titans, and then they can draft Shador Sanders. Oh, it would be great. I mean, for the other three teams in the division. But please, Dion, Jerry, it'd be the funniest thing ever. You have to make this happen for those of us here in D.C.
It'd be the most reality show thing ever.
I wonder if Cowboys fans would be excited about that.
They would, because they're boobs.
Do you really think so?
100%.
Like, what are our guys, Sean and RJ, who do morning radio in Dallas, saying today about that?
Well, they're adults, and they'll play to their audience.
Yeah.
But, like, I guarantee you, like, Truth Serum, they'd go, that's doomed to fail. That's a disaster in waiting. But you know every Rube Cowboy fan, 90% of which have never been to Dallas. But, like, the biggest name's the one that I want. He's going to command respect from all of them. Like, whatever kind of nonsense, you know, with, like, their chin-strap beards and flat hats. They love the idea. I guarantee you they're excited about it.
I want to be really quick here, rapid fire, so try to be succinct. But Colin, Falls Church, why do you give the Commanders a chance against the Lions?
Yeah, I appreciate you guys taking my call.
Hey, buddy.
And I will be quick, but I just think these guys are playing on house money right now. It's been a great season, unexpected rookie campaign. What does it look like with Jaden Daniels just slinging it, slicing apart the defense, just throw it up, contested balls, like just let him play ball? I think it could be exciting.
Daniels with house money, pretty scary. Nate, D.C., why do you have hope against the Lions?
I just really think that we have, like, we represent the underdog. You know what I mean? For one, we completely undefeated against the Lions in playoffs history, you know. But at the end of the day, listen to Jaden Daniels when he was asked why he had so much poise in the pocket. It's because of his faith. Like, at the end, you can't defeat that. Like, the Lions, they're going to dish it all out at us. I think we're going to take whatever they're going to dish out, and we're going to give it right back to them and walk away with a win.
Thanks, Nate.
Appreciate you.
I love that this fan base is not only feeling happy and I would say more than anything else, prideful.
Yeah, but
feels
like everyone's in a good spot.
They're
yeah.
confident, yeah. too. And how could you not be? This team's won 5 straight games. It's been 6 weeks since we've seen them lose.
So every one of these stretches they went on in years past where they won 5 in a row, 7 in a row, 4 in a row, whatever it was, you go, the ride's going to end. This ride is going to end at some point this year, but it's the start of something. It's not some freak losing streak with Richard Crawford returning punts. You know what I mean?
I should correct myself. They've won 6 straight games. If you count the playoff game and then the 5 in the regular season.
Oh, indeed, yeah.
5 on the last play from scrimmage. But you got to go back to the Cowboys game, which was right around Thanksgiving. That was the last time they lost a football game in one of their worst and certainly their most disappointing performance of the year. The last time Washington won a playoff game was 19 years ago. That was before this weekend. Clinton Portis was one of the key contributors on the field in Tampa. He's going to join us next on Grant and Danny here on The Fan.